Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
A survey from the UK has shown that Gen Z workers expect to be paid almost €66,000. This is by the time they turn 30. The same research also found that over half of Gen Zers put salary and benefits, as well as financial stability, above and over being passionate about their job role. And the most attractive employers for this generation? Well, they're tech companies like Microsoft and Google and Apple. And the least popular employers overall were fast food companies like KFC and McDonald's, and some public service jobs too. So how much are Gen Z's expectations and priorities different from other generations, and how likely are they to shape the wider jobs market? Well, Sinead Brady is with us now, career psychologist and author of the book Total Reset. Good morning, Sinead.
Good morning, Claire.
Lovely to have you with us. The poor old Gen Zers, they are stereotyped often, aren't they, as being lazy and unmotivated, difficult, unreliable. And how they operate that in the workplace has become a fairly hot topic in research and recruitment circles. Is that unfair to stereotype them in the way I've described?
Yes. So we have this great tendency to want to put people into kind of boxes, I suppose. And we have the Gen Zers, we have millennials, we have baby boomers, we have all these little boxes that we put people into. And the Gen Zers were born loosely, we'll say, between 1995 and 2012. And they grew up as digital natives, they're internet, smartphone savvy, very fluent when it comes to the digital world. And they communicate through, I suppose, smart technology almost exclusively. So they are really, I suppose, recalibrating the workplace in a way that we haven't seen before, Claire. Mm-hmm. So the world of work has shifted and changed, and their expectations as a result have shifted and changed. So many were born in recession times and entered the world of work during COVID-19. So they see the world through a slightly different lens, perhaps, than some of the people from other cohorts might see it. But yes, they're absolutely recalibrating how we think about work and how we feel about work and what they expect from the world of work.
And the job market that they're walking into, and they're in their early to mid-20s, aren't they, the oldest of them? I mean, It's very different to what we would have experienced when we were coming out of school or college.
Absolutely. So when we were coming out of school and college, and like that, I'm celebrating or celebrated the 23rd anniversary of my 21st quite recently. And when we came out of college, it was, very much you were looking at permanent pensionable jobs. Jobs were for life as such, or at least the industry that you walked into was for life. But with the advent of technology and so on, we now see that the gig economy has risen. We have contracts that are lasting for 6 months to 12 months. That was basically unheard of in the majority of industries 20, 30, 40 years ago. Contracts were much longer. You did your initial probation period and you stayed then for quite a long duration. So when we're dealing with people who are in this particular cohort, they're dealing with gig economy contracts. They're dealing with 6 month, 12 month contracts that are perhaps rolling across the course of years. They see 2 years as the kind of the amount of time that is good to stay in a job, to upskill, reskill, retrain, to learn an industry and then move on. They tend to stay between 2 and 5 years within particular roles, not because they want to job hop, but because if they want progression, if they want advancement, if they want development in their career, they almost must change job or industry.
Mm-hmm. So it's not that they're not ambitious. They are ambitious. And
They
treat these jobs as a stepping stone to where they want to go next. But it's also really important for this generation to be happy and to have work-life balance and to be paid well.
So this is really interesting. They have kind of almost looked up and looked around and said, the people that have gone before me, there's an epidemic of burnout. I've seen so many of the important people in my life come home from work stressed and upset, and I'm just not willing to have that as part of my life. And if a linear career, which is your traditional promotion strategy, you know, where you go from level to level with increased responsibility, takes me to the point where I can no longer enjoy time with people who make me smile and I no longer enjoy my life, well, then I don't want that. I absolutely am ambitious. I am absolutely motivated, but I want to equally ensure that my career does not consume my entire identity. And I want to be able to work well and live well. And I actually really admire that, Claire. So it is really forcing a recalibration of how we think about work, how we engage with work and how we think about careers. And they're very clear, you know, financial stability is important for me. And if that means that I have to do a job that I enjoy or engage in a career that I enjoy, 60 to 80% of the time, I'm very adult about that. I don't need to hop out of bed every morning, you know, running out to the office. I'm very happy to do something that provides financial stability, that I can meet my values in, you know, that there's equality in the workplace, that there are key pillars around sustainability, and they're very conscious about climate change, etc. And if I can satisfy that most of the time, I'm content and happy.
So chances are they are going to make the workplace better for everybody.
100% agree. Because when we have more flexibility, more autonomy, more trust, where people are actually adulting in the world of work together, where we kind of devolve these power structures that often exist within the workplace, where people work together because of the skills they bring to the table, because of the ability that they have, then we see a workplace that is about, you know, how do we progress together? How do we do things in a way that makes sure you're well, you can work well, and you can live well?
Mm-hmm. Just on the money front, so they do expect to be paid a good bit more than the average salary. This is a UK survey that we're basing this off. So
yes,
if we take it that the average salary in the UK for people who are aged 22 to 29 is around the £30,000 mark, the Gen Zers want £55,000 by the time they're 30.
So I suppose we have to look at this in context, and the cost of living has increased substantially. If you want to get onto the property market, and I know you discuss this a lot, Claire, you know, the amount of money and savings that you need to do that. So they're very pragmatic, and they're looking at this and going, in order for me to actually not just survive, but in order to live, this is the type of financial security that I need. So they are looking at, you know, 20, 30,000 euro 20 years ago was a lot of money, but it's very basic now in terms of living in a city, in terms of rent, in terms of going in and out to the office, the commute cost. So it's a very pragmatic way of looking at things and saying, actually, and many of the jobs that they have won't have, like, if we think that our work lives are going to be extended probably into our 70s, you need to be able to live in that phase of your life through pensions and investment in your pension. So this is a very important strategic objective for them to make in their financial life in order to be well. So I see it as a workplace recalibration. And certainly these are the essentially what they need to live.
Mm-hmm. Are they good at asking for this stuff that they want and expect?
So they're really good at advocating for themselves. Absolutely. For the most part, you know. But I suppose we have each, you know, across each cohorts, we have advocacy skills as we become more experienced and as we become more skilled. And so, yeah, they're really good at saying, this is actually what I need, it, you know, and this is what I want. And they're quite skilled in putting it across. But I think that's a great thing. If we were kind of, if you ask for what you want, not for what you think you'll get, at least there's an adult conversation happening. So the thing is, if there's an expectation to get it, that's very different. But at least if you have a conversation about what you want, then you can discuss, well, actually, this is how this can happen for you within this organisation, within this team. And then you can see and build a strategy together as an inclusive group of people within the workplace. Mm-hmm. But if nobody's asking for what they want and only for what they think they will get, then we don't get progression.
So I mentioned the companies that they're attracted to. So the Microsofts, the Googles and the Apples, the big tech companies. And while they'll probably get the salary that they're looking for in those companies, there's no doubt about it, they will work for that money.
Oh, Claire, and work really hard. So work intensification is almost part of the culture within many of those tech giants. And I think everybody knows that. But we have to be very careful that if they are the organisations that you're going into and you choose to go into, that you do preserve your health as well as your career. But what often is offered within those organisations is flexibility, is the ability to remotely work. And they're very important things during a particular season of, you know, a worker's life. But also the access to opportunity to upskill, to reskill, to retrain, the access to courses, the access to career development opportunities, the access to mentorship. That's extremely important. So what you will see is people going into these organisations, learning and earning their skill base and gaining experience, and then often coming out and working in other organisations that may not have the pace of work intensification that perhaps are in some of those tech giants.
But they're earning their stripes there, certainly.
Correct.
And the money as well. So then the poor old jobs, the public service jobs, fire and rescue, the police service, if we're looking at the UK, the Coast Guard, schools, becoming a teacher, again, all based in the UK, this survey, they were amongst the 20 least popular jobs. So do you agree that public service jobs are seen as less desirable now for the Gen Zers?
Yeah, so, you know, we always have people, like, we've a great appetite for education in this country, and we've a great, we have brilliant educators, but we don't have a structure that's flexible, that gives you the opportunity, you know, almost if you want to go and travel, if you're a teacher, or if you're in some of the permanent pensionable jobs, you have to give up that role to come back in 5, 10 or whatever it that looks like. So the flexibility that is there is not there, and that we know that that's really valued with this particular cohort of people. They want flexibility. So there's very, our civil and public service lacks that flexibility in many ways, particularly in that early season of your career. So yes, they are becoming less desirable, but they're still very wanted professions. And I think we also have to look at the fact that permanent pensionable roles in those sectors are very seldom there. You know, and people are not getting perhaps the security and stability that they would like to have with the flexibility.
But they might be attractive to them later in life once they have gone through all of the processes that we spoke about there. And maybe there's something that we could all learn from Gen Z. Sinead, thank you very much. Sinead Brady, career psychologist and author of Total Reset. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about sleep apnea with our resident GP who will be taking your questions. So if you want to get in touch with Dr. Maura Finn, WhatsApp us now on 0870 32 32 32.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.